Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Debbie Gankish with the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to WRMR Revenue Marketer Radio. Every Thursday, or most Thursdays at 1 o'clock, we meet to talk to a real revenue marketer and learn tips and tricks on how they've made that transition from traditional marketing all the way over to revenue marketing. And before I introduce our guest, again, let me just give you a quick definition of what a revenue marketer is. First of all, guys, it is a specific kind of marketer. Just like you have a product marketer or you've got MarCom people, the revenue marketer is that marketer or that marketing group who has revenue or revenue-related accountability through the kinds of campaigns, communications, and digital interactions they set up. Revenue marketers are responsible for the top of the sales funnel and for interacting with and nurturing leads until they are completely sales ready. And they all use some type of marketing automation platform integrated with CRM to power their revenue marketing practice. I'm so pleased to announce today's guest, my good friend Chris Fartick, and we're going to have a good time on the show. In the pre-show, we were just laughing and talking about unusual names for things and just kind of doing a little trivia. But we are going to be talking about freemiums today. And I know a lot of companies out there use freemiums, and Chris is going to share with us a little bit about how they're using marketing automation to improve that freemium to something that's absolutely paid for. So, Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I think that's the first time I've been introduced by AC/DC. I think I finally arrived, Debbie.
I finally arrived.
I got the AC/DC intro.
I love it. Yeah, it just gets me all ready to rock and roll for a great interview. I just love that piece of music. Sometimes I think about I need to change it out, but then I hear it and then I like it.
Oh, don't.
So let me share with everybody what Chris and I were talking about. Oh, and also Ed, of course, is producing the radio show today. And so let me tell you guys what we were talking about before the show. We were talking about really kind of what it takes to be an elite revenue marketer. And it just so happens I'm reading a great book which has nothing to do with marketing, but it's called Born to Run, A Hidden Tribe, Super Athletes, and the Greatest Race the World Has Ever Seen by Christopher McDougall. And they talk about an indigenous tribe in Mexico, and their name is the Tarahumara. That's Tarahumara. And I guess if you're an ultra-marathoner, you are completely familiar with this indigenous tribe. I don't think anybody on this radio show today is an elite athlete. But I just found it so interesting because they call these people like the super athlete, and nobody can quite figure out exactly how they do it. And so I thought there were a lot of parallels between these super athletes and what we call our elite revenue marketers, with the exception that we can absolutely break down how you become a super revenue marketer. So one of the topics that I'm very, very interested in is really around freemiums, and I have a number of clients who are working to use to improve those conversions. And so, Chris has been doing this for a while. So, Chris, why don't you start by telling us just a little bit about Iron Stratus and your role in the company, and then we can talk about what you guys are doing.
Sure. Start off with the shameless plug. I love it.
I love it.
So Iron Stratus, real quick. I mean, it's web access management software for cloud applications. So you can kind of think of us as the Web 2.0 single sign-on application or identity access management application, kind of the new world order. low friction, easy to use. Way to access, organize, and manage your cloud applications.
I have to tell you, Chris, we're talking in grand terms today. I'm talking about super elite athletes, and you're talking about a new world order. So it's very much a grand theme today.
No kidding. Jeez, you keep piling on the pressure here, Debbie. We're going to solve world hunger by the time this thing's over.
I know. This is exactly what I was thinking. So, and what do you do at Iron Stratus?
So I'm the director of marketing at Iron Stratus, and we're a small company, so I do pretty much everything, from a marketing perspective, from the traditional marketing communications to the lead gen, to the PR, AR. But to your point in the intro, and I've kind of lived this at most of the companies that I've been at. But at the end of the day, I'm one thing. I'm in charge of revenue. We'll get into this when we talk about freemiums. But there's no sales team here. The sales team is the marketing team, and the marketing is the sales team. So I did not know that.
So you have salespeople and you have marketing people, but you really just act as one team.
Absolutely not. We do not have any salespeople.
No, okay.
It's the new world order. It's the freemium model. It's the low friction. It's the I need something and I'm going to have it installed and I want to be using it in less than half an hour. And there's no room for a salesperson there.
Okay, that's awesome. And actually, I do remember that from when we talked about a month ago. I'm just so fascinated by this model. So tell us what you do. So I know that you guys are using marketing automation. Which system do you guys use?
So we currently use Marketo, we use Salesforce for our CRM.
Okay, and so all of your sales happen online, correct?
Yes. Yeah, so absolutely online, actually pretty much through our product. We can get into that in a little bit in terms of how that whole adoption process works. But it's a fluid beast, in that the same way you use it is the same way you buy it.
Well, so tell us what that process looks like for our listeners.
So, I mean, in kind of general terms, I tend to think of freemiums as a business model or a go-to-market strategy. And just to kind of clue everyone in if you're not familiar with what freemiums are, but it's basically offering a free version of your product or service. And then charging for advanced features, modules, or additional usage. And I'm sure this is very much kind of the web 2.0. Again, it's a buzzy word, but it seems to resonate. But it's kind of that model. And the way that we kind of look at it is almost a. We use a freemium, if you will, and in our case, the freemium is again it's software. You go to our website, or actually even before that, you obviously have a problem. Like I need to solve a single sign-on problem in my organization, and usually where you start is online. You search for single sign-on or easy single sign-on or one login or single password. Or something like that, and that's where it all begins. And you do your evaluation. When you do your research on there, and you see either organically or paid ads come up, and you're basically doing your evaluation based on those. And so you go to the website, you sign up, and that free version is typically what has been a evaluation white paper in the past, or a top 10 things you need to know before you do XYZ, or pre-installation checklist of product XYZ. It's really become kind of the bait, if you will, or the offer asset that has been like the content syndication staple in the past. And I say past, two, 3 years ago. So that's where it starts. And so, you're using the product and again, first name, last name, and email, is pretty much, all you're collecting at that point. And then, it's up to the product and you as a marketer, to kind of get the user to adopt and then get the user to convert. And in my world, a conversion is a free user to a paid user. So that's kind of the general structure of the way that I think most freemium models work, and you know, it's probably a little bit different for services than products, and we kind of straddle the software because we are software as a service. We kind of straddle a little bit of both, but that's a kind of a good framework to kind of think about it in.
I think, again, what's unique in your model is that everything is being run by marketing. There is no salespeople, but it's just the nature of actually what you're selling and how easy it is to buy it. But I think that's a really good summary of what freemiums are and how B2B companies are using a freemium process as they take a look at beginning an engagement. And so a lot of times, especially we do a business with a lot of software companies, it could be like a trial version of the software or something like that. And then you're right. I mean, once you become free and you can see how great it is once you've planted that bait, then it's to get them to adopt it. And again, for most companies, conversion does happen at the point at which they go from being free to paid. So why don't you kind of take us on the journey? I mean, how long have you guys been doing this, and kind of where are you in that adoption and that conversion, and kind of how is Marketo helping you guys with those conversions?
So we really look at it, in terms of two big buckets, if you will. You know, obviously there's the piece that I outlined earlier was there's the acquisition side, right? There's getting people just using it. And then there's to at least get people, through the door, if you will. We call them, a registered user, is what we call someone who is acquired or, a customer acquisition. And then on the back end of that is adopted. You basically have someone adopted, so that they've shown enough interest in the application to become an adopted user, someone who we consider is a user of the product, not a one and done that just came in and said, not good, didn't meet my need. And so where, Marketo has really, helped us from a marketing standpoint is obviously in the, in the acquisition, we track all of the, standard metrics on the acquisition side. But where we've really relied on it is in the adoption cycle, because we actually found early on that it was pretty easy to acquire users. This was kind of one of the first tests that we ran was, okay, so we kind of needed to test the business model, because traditionally, in my world, SSO and identity and access management are very old school kind of entrenched, installed application, enterprise sale type things. And so, we kind of said, hey, we've got a great idea here, and we think this is going to be a new way to do it, because there's a huge problem in that, companies are moving to SaaS applications, and, how do you manage your identity for those SaaS applications? How do you manage your credentials for those SaaS applications? The first thing we needed to do was obviously test the market to see if we can actually acquire people through this model. Can we get people to sign up? And we found early on that that was pretty easy to do. What we found was hard was the adoption. Was to get once we got people in the door, we had to get them using the product, because we didn't have salespeople calling say, hey, I noticed you signed up for our free webinar, or I noticed you downloaded this white paper, can I answer any questions for you? We had to do this all through nurture campaigns and actually within the product. We've been using from my perspective, we've been using Marketo pretty heavily on the nurture side to get people in certain stages of adoption, and triggering campaigns to deliver certain pieces of content or tips and tricks at, at certain stages, as well as, one of those stages is, okay, we see that you are, a pretty well-adopted user. why don't you start paying now? I mean, it's not that obtuse, but
I could see that.
Hey, I'm making notes right now, Debbie.
Don't you ready to pay now? So okay.
Totally.
So let me ask you some questions about this before we get too far down, because again, this is such a fabulous use case for, because again, every B2B marketer has this thing where at some point either an inside telequalifier or sales is calling, yeah, I noticed you did this. So first of all, you had defined earlier, you have acquisition and you have adoption. Now, adoption is a user who's like continuously using it, but they're not paying yet. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. An adopted, and then we have levels of, we call them paid users, but we have, kind of certain usage levels within paid user. But yeah, an adopted user is someone who is adopted but has not yet paid in our universe.
Okay. Perfect. And then you talked about something that is really super smart. And this was a topic of, we're a sponsor of the Marketing Cloud, and we had a webinar yesterday about content. 2,200 people registered, 850 people attended the webinar. And part of what we talk about is mapping the buying stages and mapping content to that and then triggering campaigns off of that. So one of the things that you said that you guys are doing heavily with Marketo is in this adoption phase, since you don't have any salespeople, that you have stages of adoption and you're triggering content based
Absolutely.
On the stage. So tell me about what are the stages of adoption that you've defined?
Yeah, so we look at a few different stages. We look at so we have what we call registered user, and this is basically a new user who has just signed up. So they get the welcome email. They get the email that that says, hey, thanks for coming in. Here are the three things that that you should be able to do in Iron Stratus. Then we have, and from that we get to an activated user. So because we are an identity and access management company, web access management, identity, credential, security are pretty important to us. So we require an email validation, that this is really you. And so we have an activated stage in there to where we send content saying, hey, we noticed you haven't validated this email, and there's kind of a clock that ticks, meaning if you log in, and I think we have the trigger set at like five times. If you haven't validated your email in that time, you basically can't log in until you validate. Further along the continuum, we have a logged in, what we call a logged in user. And basically that is someone, so that I'm getting a little deep here, but
this is great.
So it's basically someone who, because we do require an extension to be downloaded on your browser. And we've noticed that we saw, a lot of abandonment at that point. So we actually added that as a, as an adoption stage. To know if someone has, downloaded the extension for the application, because you can't actually manage your credentials within the application without having this plugin in your browser. And so we have, if we notice that people abandon at a certain stage, we send emails. We send emails to them saying, hey, are you having problems? Visit this page. We noticed you were using this browser. Visit this page, for troubleshooting tips if you're having problems, doing that. We actually just changed this a little bit for our last release. So And then I think we have three stages. I think we have three stages of adopted user. We have a stage one, which is kind of what we look at as an evaluation stage. So has someone added an application into what we call their vault? So basically, has someone said, okay, I want to add. We'll use Marketo as the example. You know, has someone added Marketo into their vault in terms of being able to manage that application? So, have they even used functionality within the product? And if we don't see action there, we trigger an email. To say, hey, did you know that, you know, you can easily add applications, step 1, 2, 3, 4, watch a video. And then we have, what we call kind of the evaluation, we have the evaluation step, and then we have the trial step. And the trial step is, okay, so if we see someone has evaluated, we assume that they're kind of evaluating for an organization, and it's an application admin just saying, okay, is this thing really going to even solve my problem? And then kind of the second stage of adoption is looking at if we think that they are piloting within the organization. So they've said in their mind, they said, yeah, I think this would actually solve my problem. I'm actually going to try it out, kind of in a smaller group, which is a lot of the, you know, when we did, original research, we found it was a typical motion a lot of people took when looking at these types of applications. So we kind of have a stage two adoption, which is kind of the trial or a pilot. That they would run, and the way that we see this is, you know, if they've invited users into the organization, or excuse me, into the application as an organization. So if we see people start inviting users, we send them an email, saying, hey, you know, did you know that, you know, you can, you know, do this, you can kind of do these three things with users. Or if we don't see people progressing from the evaluation to trial, we send them an email. Did you know that you could add users? This is great. This is a great way to pilot within your company, share applications with other users within a group if you're using this for a group stage. And then we have the stage three, and this is someone who has basically completed all the other stages, and they just have not converted to a paid user yet. And so we basically send them emails at that point. If we don't see a progression, we send them emails to say basically the value of upgrading. And the upgrade in our sense is actually tied to seats. So our freemium model is based on you get five seats free, basically, and anything beyond that you have to pay for. And we realize, obviously, with any freemium model, you have to realize that people are going to park. And when I say park, that people aren't going to upgrade. And so that's the continuum
okay.
that we use Marketo for.
Makes a lot of sense. Hold on. Just had to get my headpiece on right here. So how long did it take you guys to validate that model?
Oh, geez. That model is probably about the 10th, 20th iteration. I mean, we did, you know, we started out, like I was telling you, we started out a lot with kind of just with validating things, as we go. And one of the biggest things that, you know, I mean, is we kind of go through this. I mean, it's almost a blessing and a curse. We release all the time. You know, I mean, just because of the nature of the business and the nature of, you know, kind of SaaS applications or, you know, cloud-based applications or, you know, kind of whatever you want to call them, we are always, always releasing. It's good and it's bad. It's good in that we're always releasing. But it's bad, or it's good in the sense that we're always learning too. So we can test. You know, we usually release something production, meaning an external release, about every 2 to 4 weeks. So we can always test things in a live environment pretty easily. That is absolutely huge to be able to, and that's how we kind of got to, you know, understanding where a lot of these, you know, a lot of these pitfalls were, where people were stalling. Like, okay, so what's happening here? Why aren't people getting from point A to point B? Why aren't people getting from a registration, meaning they clicked the registration button, to actually putting something into their vault? Well, we thought, okay, well, let's walk through the process. Oh, wait, there's a plugin that needs to get installed. So there's a piece of technology that's a barrier there. So let's address that. We have a login issue. You know what I mean? After you actually download that plugin, the way the product works is you actually have to validate your credentials within that plugin. So it requires another login. Not the best, you know, I mean, we haven't figured that out from a technology standpoint yet. So it becomes, you know, it becomes a marketing issue in terms of, you know, kind of education and to kind of pull them through. So, I mean, it really just becomes, you know, we started out with like, okay, the way it all started was just with, okay, so we're going to go from registration to usage, just thinking, oh, we're just going to see if people are using. And then, you know, I mean, and at that point it became, you know, just egregiously obvious, okay, so there's a problem. You know, there's like, you know, I think we had 10% conversion rate, from that. And, you know, and just kind of, you know, like you say, walking through, putting yourself in the customer's shoes and just saying, what's in the way here? And then, you know, basically building those into kind of measurable points within the process. And then obviously adding, you know, kind of communication points, again, to the nurture campaign.
Okay, I got to tell you, wait, hold on a minute, because I want to make a few comments. First of all, I was kind of stunned when I asked you how many times how long and how many iterations to kind of get to a pretty validated model. And you said, Debbie, it's our 10th or our 20th.
Yeah,
which is fabulous. But the first thing I thought was, we work with a lot of companies that do trial software. And we're always working with them around this process of how you get someone to convert from trial to paid, right, which is basically the freemium model. Yeah. And I think the next time I do this with somebody, I'm going to tell them, let's imagine you have no salespeople. So you have to get so deep into this process. You have to obsess over this process. There are no salespeople. I think having people go through that will do a couple of things. I also like what you said about, you know, do the walkthrough, what's in the way, putting the measurable points in place, and then sending out the communication. But I think if they could walk through those four steps with the idea that there's no salespeople, I think there would be a lot more rigor and also a lot more testing and validation in this freemium to conversion process. So that's the first thing that I noticed, and I think that is a
brilliant.
I mean, it's kind of like you have nothing else to turn to. You have no sales, so this process has got to be as good as it could possibly get. There's no other solution, right?
Absolutely.
So that's a great example. And then the next thing I wanted to ask, how long have you guys had Marketo?
Over a year.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I think probably a little bit over a year.
Okay, and if you think about your architecture, because, again, it's really great to get that usage data and to be able to trigger campaigns off of usage data, right? Either they didn't log on or they didn't validate or they're not using it or they're using it. So if you'd be able to have that digital dialogue, right, it's like you're sitting right there seeing and talking to them about how they're using it, but you're having this very smart digital dialogue, which helps them move down the path in the easiest frame. Where your usage data, is it going into Salesforce.com and then Salesforce.com feeding into Marketo?
Right. We've got Salesforce plugged into the production database and you know, kind of figuring, and that was no easy feat, but you know, I mean, for the few basic things that we've gotten there.
I have to tell you, I did not want to minimize that particular integration point because it's never easy for anyone, but it's so valuable. It's so valuable. You know, one of my good friends is Jim Linscold of the Linscold Group. As a matter of fact, we underwrote his current marketing ROI survey, and he's actually working with us to publish something called the Revenue Marketing Index. But I also was on tour with Jim. We went through 14 cities with Marketo, and Jim spoke in all the cities, and so did I. Jim's got this one graphic where he talks about there's five things that you can do to get to ROI quicker than anything else. Number one is segmentation, but number two is to make an impact deep in the pipeline. And I don't think there's, I don't think you get any deeper in the pipeline than a freemium or a free trial and maximizing those conversions, because those conversions, small changes in those conversions make a big impact on revenue. And that's exactly what we're talking about here. So number one, got to have something like Marketo so that you can trigger all those campaigns off of. Number two, you have to integrate it with your back end. And while that's never a small task, you know, it's absolutely well worth it because of the impact that you can make. So were you guys trying to do conversions before you had Marketo?
No. I mean, so when, when I came in, so we, you know, I about a year ago, you know, when I came in was basically kind of when we kind of kicked off, because, I mean, I didn't even mention, we actually had before our current version of Iron Stratus, we actually had a kind of a legacy product, which was the exact opposite in terms of a, you know, kind of a installed, you know, kind of an installed application meant to manage cloud applications. Just didn't work. And, you know, as we kind of said, okay, look, we need to loosen this up a little bit. That's kind of when they brought me in, and at the very beginning was like, okay, if we're gonna do this model, you know, we need to, as you say, I mean, we need to have visibility, and I need to be able to act deep in the pipeline. So we need to get, you know, I mean, I basically need to hook Iron Stratus up to Salesforce so I can market this way. And that is absolutely, it's dead on.
So a lot of testing, a lot of measurement, lot of change, and of course Marketo is the tool that was where you were doing all the trigger campaigns from. So, and you also had talked about that early days you were doing about 10% conversion. Have your conversion rates gone up?
Yeah, so from in the you know, kind of in that 10% I referred to was kind of from the registration to adopted, which is, again, you know, to kind of re-clarify the definitions. Register is someone who just, I mean, it's almost the raw lead in general marketing terms. You know, it's just someone who has entered information, and in our sense, it's a registered user, someone who actually clicks register. To an adopted user, which is someone who is using the application on a daily basis but is not paid. That started out, I mean, it was around 10%, kind of in the, you know, in the early days. I mean, it kind of, you know, peaked and valleyed depending on, because I was doing a lot of, you know, kind of on the acquisition side, I was doing like a lot of campaigns to say, oh, is this working? So, but I'd say it averaged at 10%, but, you know, kind of after we started kind of learning things, you know, we've got it to pretty much about a 20-25% conversion rate, in that we know the number of people.
Wait, Chris, you guys have gone like from 10% to 20-25% in like a year?
Yeah. I mean, I was a little curious as to how you would react to that. I didn't know if that would have been.
Oh, because, I mean, if you talk.
Bad? It depends.
No,
you know what I mean?
That's what I call a Tana Humana run right there. That's like. I mean, just imagine it. I mean, I have one client where literally, we're looking for a 2% uplift in this kind of conversion rate. That's it.
Oh, wow.
And just a 0.5%, it would be phenomenal, but 2% is like reaching way out there. So the fact that you guys have gone from 10% to somewhere between 20-25%, oh, yeah, that's really good. That puts you in the elite category with those other titles.
Oh, hold on. I'm recording you for my next board meeting. Hold on a second.
Just haven't called Debbie.
Did you hear what she said?
I'm brilliant.
Yeah. See, guys, Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of one of those things. You know, the numbers are always relative, depending on, you know, kind of what you're talking about, you know. But but yeah, I mean, from that perspective, you know, we've gotten pretty safely to a point where we know, okay, so the number of people that, you know, kind of we throw in the front, we get, you know, this many people out of the wood chipper in the back, you know what I mean? Which was the goal. We needed some sort of, I mean, that was a big thing. We needed some sort of predictability, in terms of generating pipeline and things like that, you know, for, as I say, for board meetings, or, you know, just kind of, for my boss and just, you know, kind of general marketing practices. So yeah, I mean that's kind of, you know, that's where we're at now. And like I made the joke earlier, I'm recording for my board meeting because that's obviously it's never good enough, right? You know, it's
Chris,
always like,
this
well,
is gonna be
why
available. This will be on iTunes 4 minutes after we hang up.
Okay.
You download
Perfect.
It to your heart's content, and when you walk out, you can just play it. I'm great. Now
Perfect.
Let's do it. So yeah.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Stuart Smalley. I'm good enough, and I'm smart enough, and.
Right,
Debbie
right.
Geish thinks I'm awesome.
There you go. Absolutely. So I want to talk specifically about a few things. So first of all, I just love the idea that you're the one that goes into the board meeting and says, here's what we've done, and here's our pipeline. And it is all being driven by marketing. When we define a revenue marketer, we absolutely define the revenue marketer as someone who not just reports on what they've done, but who can also forecast what they're going to do around revenue. And we call that RPS, repeatable, predictable, and sustainable. So, you are like this fabulous case study on just how far marketing can take this impact on revenue. It's fabulous. I want you to give me a couple of examples of, you know, when you guys started using Marketo, which was about a year ago, and just a few examples around, you know, how you used Marketo, what did the trigger campaigns look like? I mean, how did those things kind of get set up? And so just talk a little bit about the use of Marketo in creating those trigger campaigns. Not something
yeah.
about feed function, but just kind of in general.
Yeah, so I mean, in general, I mean, it was really, like I say, it was, you know, we had to start somewhere, and like I said, you know, we started with, okay, so we've got, you know, we've got the registered user, and then we've got an adopted user, and you know, and originally we just kind of had the, you know, we had the campaigns, you know, we had campaigns set up as a, you know, just as a, you know, kind of as a, okay, registered user, step one, you know, you get the welcome email, which you still do now. You get the welcome email, and then a day later or 2 days later, you get, you know, the, hey, did you know you could add applications email? It was triggered on time, days, really.
Yeah.
Very fundamental. That's where we started. And then as we kind of started looking at, you know, kind of conversion rates, and obviously there's, I'm oversimplifying a lot of this, but we started looking at, you know, kind of the, you know, the rates from, you know, of as we started building in, you know, kind of more steps in that, you know, kind of in that conversion process. We kind of started, you know, just crafting, and I'm by no means saying that every time we changed an email, or, you know, we put new content in an email, or, you know, we tried, this was interesting, Debbie, actually. I know you did say you didn't want to get into the feature function, but, man, our HTML emails are horrible. Nobody likes HTML emails. Everyone likes text. So, I mean, we,
really?
You know, that was,
yeah.
Yeah, that was a big thing. It's like, you know, we get, you know, we get, you know, we get like a, you know, it's like we get twice as many clicks on the text emails, on the text based emails. Anyway, an aside.
I always tell marketers test, right? You think they want HTML, but do they really just test? You know, just test is what pulls, and 2x is huge. Right?
No, it really is, and those are kind of just those little things. I mean, it's the you know, and I've got many a tirade on you know kind of on the landing pages as well. But I mean that was absolutely so. When I say you know we kind of you know we you know we just you know kind of changed emails. I mean we did we kind of did the you know we did you know a lot of the you know kind of the A/B testing or like I say just kind of going through you know kind of putting ourselves in the thing of like okay or you know in the shoe and saying okay what would they be experiencing. So, you know, do I want to, you know, how do I want to address this? Do I just want to be as, you know, kind of simple as possible and just kind of, you know, hey, we noticed you have not, you know, downloaded the plugin. Try 1, 2, or 3. I mean, that was like lukewarm. What really helped was when we actually just, we said, look, we're just going to build a page, right? And just say, okay, and we can obviously detect, you know, what type of browser they're using, and send them to that page and, you know, and kind of troubleshoot from there. And then another thing that we started, you know, that we kind of started doing
was... Well,
and
not only that, it gives you additional information to whether you were right to build a page or not, because you can see if they're visiting the page, right?
Absolutely.
So you're just dropping more breadcrumbs along the way to take a look at their behavior and try to understand it.
Absolutely. The other big, you know, aha as we kind of, you know, just kind of started, you know, building in a lot of these was, you know, was actually kind of embedding videos, but putting links to videos within the, you know, within the email to, you know, to actually say, you know, instead of just saying, hey, did you know you can add an application? It's easy, it's fun, and blah, blah, blah. But actually including a link to saying, here's how you do it, and here's what it looks like. You know, that helped, you know, kind of.
So tell me how that helps, because, you know, everyone's talking about video this year and how you use video to create a better and more intimate digital dialogue. So what kind of impact do you think putting those videos in for help?
It cut down on, you know, I mean, it cut down on, you know, I mean, I'll call it air quote support requests. In that, you know, we didn't, you know, we, every now and then we would have people, you know, we kind of would have people raising their hands, and saying, hey, I can't do this or I can't do that. And this just kind of illustrated the, you know, kind of the, you know, the process in that, you know, we don't have salespeople. We don't have a big support staff. You know, we want, I mean, the whole idea here is self-service, you know, and so, you know, having videos to where, you know, kind of we could walk people through a process, number one, cut down on the text they have to read in emails.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and just kind of put a, you know, I mean, it kind of gave us a support staff and gave us a salesperson in some instances, you know, to where we could just kind of, you know, just, you know, point them to a video and say, you know, I mean, there's not that many, you know, we've architected our product. I think we've designed our product to be pretty easy to use. So there's, I mean, it's not like we have this whole, you know, bastion of videos sitting out on YouTube. But, you know, the ones that we do have are the ones that are important in terms of, you know, kind of these are the big things you want to do. You want to be able to invite users. You want to be able to add users. You want to be able to organize applications. You want to be able to add applications and manage them. That's it. I mean, we have 5 or 6 videos. But, you know, that was something that was just, you know, I mean, that helped a lot. And actually,
I have to ask another question because marketers
yep.
want to know, how did you produce those videos? Were they expensive? How did you get them produced?
I use Jing. It is, you will hear my voice on every one of those videos. And it is just quite honestly me sitting at a laptop. And, you know, I do a quick script beforehand, and they're about, you know, 2 to 3 minutes, and you're listening to me and watching my screen as I go do things. It doesn't have to be hard, people. Yeah, it's like, you know, I mean, these are not, you know, high-produced things. These are kind of down and dirty, because like I say, we move fast. We move every 2 to 4 weeks. We've got new product out, and sometimes those screens change. And if I spend $10,000 on a, you know, on a video that's going to last, you know, 2 weeks or a month, that just doesn't work. So it's, you know, it's got to be something that is, you know, that is easy.
Yeah, I'm on your YouTube site right now, and yeah, you're right. You have 5 videos. 5 minutes. And there you go. I hear you're
there.
So yeah.
Director of marketing.
I just had to go look. So, but you found that introducing video as part of this premium conversion process was very helpful.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, like I say, the way that I think about it and, you know, the way I tend to articulate it is that, you know, in some sense it gives – I mean, we do have support, but it gives us a bigger support team, and it actually, like I say, in some sense gives us a, you know, sales team, you know, contact sales, you know what I mean, view the video type thing. So.
I love that. I mean, I think that's a great – so what other ahas did you have along the way?
Well, you know, it's not as much tied to Marketo, but it was a little bit in terms of the philosophy on the model itself in that, you know, I came from and I grew up in, you know, kind of traditional software sales, meaning installed applications where, as a marketer, it really was, oh yeah, we can market, you know, 3 months, a quarter or 6 months out. You know, I mean, the sales cycles were that long. So, you know, why not? And, someone saw a feature or a benefit or something like that, that, you know, that we had, on a website or a white paper or something like that, you know, we could market in front of where the product was, but, you know, kind of in, you know, in this model, it's, you know, is really a, you know, it's kind of really a different kind of a, you know, a different world in terms of they're very, very, you know, kind of, you know, market driven, but in a much smaller timeline, meaning that when we say we have something, that person is about 90 seconds away from calling us out on it. So, you know, that was something that became very, very clear in terms of, you know, a lot of things that we were putting on our website, you know, a lot of things that we were doing from, drip campaigns, you know, kind of prospecting, if you will, from abandons and things like that. I mean, that just became like, we became acutely aware really fast that, you know, if we were saying that, you know, you can easily do X, Y, or Z, that, you know, we could see pretty easily that we would get a lot of one and dones with those types of messages, because, you know, like I say, people can go in, sign up, and see for themselves all in, like I say, 90 seconds. So that was something that, you know, I mean, that it's in hindsight, it's like you just want to kind of go, yeah, duh. But, you know, as we were kind of going through this, you know, we were saying, oh, yeah, we're going to have this great, you know, piece of functionality coming out. You know, a lot of the vision, a lot of the here's how great Iron Stratus is. And, it, you know, it was a, it was, you know, as we kind of started looking at those things rather than kind of the more tactical, here's what you can do right now. When we started looking at those numbers and, you know, kind of those conversions, you know, in Marketo and in Salesforce, that was a pretty big aha for a lot of us, and we kind of learned that lesson real quick.
So I have a question, and your answer just now kind of made me think about it. So when you guys envisioned Iron Stratus and you envisioned the solution, did you think you were going to have salespeople, or did you always say we're going to try to not have salespeople?
That was our differentiator. Our differentiator, obviously is, you know, we think we have better technology, but, you know, we really thought in the world that we live in, I mean, we basically manage access for cloud applications. Cloud applications are built to be frictionless. You are meant to be able to get in them pretty easily. And so, you know, having a solution that was kind of full of friction points up front, meaning, you know, contact our salesperson for a free demo. I mean, no, that didn't seem congruent with the market we were serving. So we made a conscious effort when you know when we created that, when we kind of said, okay, this is the way we're going to do it. That was very much a linchpin of that model.
So, Chris, if you were talking to somebody, and let's say they don't sell the kind of solution, maybe they sell some kind of technology. And, you know, there is going to be more of a salesperson involvement, you know, kind of model. Eventually, it's somewhere along this freemium to conversion, you know, process. What lessons learned would you apply into that model based on what you've learned from your model?
Well, so I know that this is going to be a cop out, Debbie, and I'm going to own up to it. I'm going to own up to it right up front. But in my case, it has been so true, and it is without a doubt. I mean, the one lesson that has made us successful. And
Wait. One lesson. This is like the be all end all.
This is
the single most important piece of advice you have for the marketer right here. This is the big aha, the huge lesson learned.
This is it. And get permission to fail. Get permission to fail, and fail fast and fail often, because that's the only way you learn. It's the only way that I would know how to do this job I have now. You know, if I didn't have the, you know, and I'll couch this with like, okay, you know, when I say fail often and fail fast, I mean, be able to kind of track that failure and learn from that failure. But it, kind of broader sense is that know that you will fail, because you will. And if you don't, I don't think you're going to be successful.
I'm glad that made sense because I feel it's sometimes ethereal, Chris. I completely agree with that piece of advice. I actually wrote a blog a few years ago called "Fail Fast and Fail Forward." And,
I'm going to steal fail forward. That's perfect.
Yeah, fail fast and fail forward. That's what I was going to do. And I don't even take credit for that. That's actually from my good friend, Jim Kaner. And Jim is a drop-in VP of sales and marketing. When companies are in trouble, Jim gets dropped in. Jim's on his fourth company, and every single time he brings in marketing automation. Every single time, because he's a believer of this model, fail fast and fail forward. So I think your advice is perfect.
Fantastic. Okay. It's kind of funny. I get asked that question a lot whenever, you know, I mean, sometimes I swear people are rolling their eyes when I say that, but I don't know a better way to articulate it other than, you know, It really does. I mean, it's setting expectations. You know, I mean, like, you know, you've got customers within the organization, and, you know, and obviously one of those customers, in my case, is a board that I'm accountable to. And just saying that, you know, this is the business we're in, and, you know, and none of this, a lot of this from our perspective and our specific industry has not been done before. So, you know, there will be failures. We will be testing, and here's what we're going to be testing, and here's what we hope to learn. So,
that's my piece of advice. But I have a follow up question to that piece of advice. So you're a brand new marketer. You're looking at marketing automation. Maybe you just bought marketing automation, and somebody tells you, Chris, you know, you need to pay attention to people, process, and technology. And you're thinking to yourself, I just got to get this technology in and up and running. What would you say to that?
So that's an interesting question. Oh, man. So I've just got to get this, you know. So I think I've always been very much of a proponent of technology is the easy part and process is the hard part. Process to
me. Yes, because you didn't go through 20 different marketing automation systems, but you did go through 20 different models, right?
So I am very much of a proponent of, you know, technology follows the process. I come from software, in that, you know, that's where my career's been spent, and, you know, in you know, in content management, and which is very process, you know, kind of process oriented. And we always had, you know, kind of the mantra that you know, content management is not a technology, it's a process. And that is something so true, and that's a perfect example of that, in that you don't have, you know, 20 different, you know, marketing automation systems. You know, I mean, you may have multiple processes that support that, but yeah, I mean, I would absolutely say that the, you know, kind of the people in the process are more important than the technology. The technology is the easy part, in my opinion.
Today's technology, it is very much the easier part, especially with a system like Marketo, which, of course, is built in kind of reputation and market on ease to use, and it truly is. Well, anyway. Well, Chris, we are out of time. It has been a complete pleasure and a blast to talk to you today. I think we're going to have to create we're going to create a new kind of revenue marketer, and we're going to call these the Tata Humatas. And you're going to be our first member to the club.
Perfect.
So I think that what you are doing is just completely amazing. And congratulations on all your success. And it's just been a real blast to talk to you today.
Well, thanks so much for having me. Do I get the AC/DC extra there?
You are going to get the extra, but first let me tell everybody that our show next week will be with Alex Pelletier, known for a long time as with Acquizio. You can also listen to all of these fabulous interviews and meet these fabulous marketers on iTunes. Everyone have a great week, and if we could cue the AC/DC one more time.